On this episode of the Racquetball Show podcast, a couple of my St. Louis friends, Brendan Gildrum and Mark Kissel, come on the show to discuss a funny story and a very exciting racquetball story about Mark Kissel's engagement to his now fiance Amanda. We have an instructional segment featuring some tips on how to optimize your serve, and we have an interview with USA Racquetball President Dan Whitley. Hope you enjoy this episode of the Racquetball Show podcast.
Ten, serving ten, must win by 2 points.
It is absolute pandemonium here.
I will be the greatest player to ever play the game.
Anybody who won't dive for it
shouldn't be playing racquetball.
Get that ball. Get the ball.
So now we have a special segment of the Racquetball Show where I'm bringing on one of my friends, Mark Kissel, who just proposed to his girlfriend, now fiance, Amanda. Mark, so this is a, I think I'm bringing it on because I think it'll be a funny and very racquetball story. So Mark, could you describe how you proposed to Amanda?
Sure thing, Dylan. And first of all, I'd just like to thank you for being here. It's just a real treat to be a part of this whole podcast that I enjoy listening to on a weekly basis. So
you're welcome, man. So could you describe how you proposed to Amanda?
Sure thing. Yeah. So I guess once I decided that I was going to propose to Amanda, I knew that it was going to be in such a way to where racquetball was related to the proposal, because I knew that she would appreciate a proposal having to do with how we met.
Yeah, and so to give a little backstory, you guys, we're sitting here. We're at the high school national championships in Portland, Oregon, and this is where you guys met 2 years ago.
Yes, this was the first time. We're both from St. Louis. We were both coaching high school teams from St. Louis, but it took us traveling across the country to actually talk to each other for the first time. So, yeah, so we met here, so I figured it would only be fitting to continue our relationship through racquetball. I guess in my mind, I thought, we play mixed doubles together. I figured, let's do it at a racquetball tournament. That sounds great. And I'll just kind of end up proposing in the middle of a mixed doubles match or something like that.
Yeah.
And I had initially kind of planned on proposing in a spring tournament, but then found out that she was going to be out of town for her sister's volleyball tournament. Therefore, that would make it really difficult for me to propose to her with her not there. So that being said, I ended up kind of throwing the whole thing together in a matter of about a week and a half and getting everybody else involved. And I guess my buddy, my boss, Dan, also was yep. in on the whole game as well. And so I managed to get the ring. I opened up a racquetball. I just kind of cut it open a little bit so I could slide the ring inside. And then that was just in Dan's pocket throughout our match, because he typically likes to wear a hoodie or something like that in his first match. And so he put it in a zippered pocket so it would be safe. So we started playing the match. Next thing you know, we're about 10 points in or so, and I fake an injury. I fall in the back of the court. I make her believe that I hurt myself, and in all of the commotion and the hubbub, we ended up doing the old switcheroo on the balls.
Yep.
Now, that being said, I guess because of the tension being a little higher in the whole situation, I was a little nervous. I didn't actually realized that Dan did the switcheroo initially. He handed off the ball to me, and then I went to go walk back to the service box after I said I was fine, and I bounced the ball, but then realized, oh my goodness, this is the ball with the ring in it. And thankfully Amanda wasn't looking, and I picked it up right away, and I thought, okay, I need to need to propose now, I guess. So I walk back up to the service box. I bounce the ball as I was just about to start to serve. I was going to do a high lob to the backhand side.
This is the point of contention, because from observers I've heard of the story, mm-hmm. I heard you were getting ready to drive serve your engagement ring, not knowing that it was an actual racquetball.
Interestingly enough, I did find out, thankfully, before I would have just driven that ball into the wall and busted it into smithereens, and probably damaging the ring in the process.
Word on the street I've heard is you probably wouldn't have damaged the ring with your drive serve, given that it's not, you know, the hardest of serves. That's what I've heard.
I guess everybody has differing opinions on the subject. That's fine.
There are a lot of opinions.
Yeah.
Now, let me bring in, we have another correspondent. We have Brendan Giljam out of St. Louis. Brendan, could you give us a little bit of your insight into the situation?
Sure thing. Well, as the cameraman for the whole ordeal, Dan and I were under the impression that Mark would want to make this happen much earlier into the game so as to not have anybody be all sweaty for the pictures or anything. And so in the extended uncut edition of it, you will hear all the bystanders saying, like, holy cow, when is he going to do this? Like, there was a great time. Okay, there was a great time. There was a great time. And we just assumed that he had either forgotten to do it or was planning on just, like, waiting till the second game.
I would assume he got cold feet or something.
That was brought up in there as well. We were talking about his cold feet. We zoom in on his feet, and I ask my friend Paul next to me, you know, to describe the feet, and he said that they were chilled. So that was actually discussed as well. We thought that, yeah. So, yeah, no, it was, it was a pleasure to be a part of, though.
Yeah, and then going back to Mark, if you wouldn't mind explaining what Amanda's reaction was, how the general overall scene was at the post-engagement,
sure.
Post-proposal.
And I guess, well, when I did ask her and I pried open the ball, the ring wasn't exactly visible because I shoved some ribbon into the ball, so then the ring wasn't clanging around inside or anything. So we actually kind of had to dig around a little bit to find it initially. But she was pretty speechless, which was cool. Glad to know that it was legitimately a surprise for her. So it was a very, very cool moment. And she definitely just loved every second of it, and her family being a part of it too, watching the game. And then afterwards, we ended up going to a local restaurant that actually supports the high school racquetball program. They said that they would donate 20% during any racquetball tournament. It's Three Kings in South County in St.
Nice.
Louis. Yeah, they said that they would donate 20% to the high school racquetball program any time there's a racquetball tournament. So we decided to go there afterwards, and some of her friends from out of town came in to surprise her there. And so it was just a fun evening with a lot of good family and friends in the racquetball community.
That's fantastic. So, not only were you able to have an amazing racquetball story and become engaged, but you raised some money for racquetball in the process. That's what we're really looking for. You know?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's all for the kids.
Yeah,
really.
Don't be selfish with your proposal. Really, like, try to help our sport out, okay?
Right, yeah. You're right.
Mark, thanks for coming on. That's an amazing story. I love sharing racquetball stories like that.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
congrats
being
on
here.
Congrats on the engagement.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Brendan, comment.
Thanks for having me as well. Pleasure to just be here.
It was amazing.
For the instructional segment of this episode, episode 9, I am going to be going over my thoughts on how to serve optimally. And there are a lot of thoughts that I could provide on this. So obviously with this being one segment, there's a lot more that I could get into, but these are some quick thoughts that I have on serving that can hopefully benefit your game. So serving is important because it's the only time that you are fully in control. In any other shot in the rally, your opponent is kind of dictating where you have to be hitting the ball from. That location and the speed of the ball are determined by the way your opponent hits it. On the serve, you have full control. You get to drop the ball exactly how you want to. And hit it from the exact location that you want to whatever location you want to. So you want to take advantage of that fact. In my podcast with Rocky Carson, he stated that the two most important shots in racquetball are the serve and the serve return. So that's something to keep in mind as to why the serve is so important.
obviously there are two types of serves. There's the lob serve and the drive serve, and then within those there are many sub-types of serves. But I'm going to go over some of the important concepts that you should know about both types. But for both serves, there are some concepts that are important. For both lob serves and drive serves, there are things that apply. Some important thoughts are that you should mix up your serves. So keep your opponent guessing. They will get into a groove if you keep serving the same serve over and over, but if you mix it up to the point where they're not sure what to expect or they haven't developed the muscle memory or the timing to the serve that you're hitting, you're going to be much more effective. Keep track also of important metrics. So, for example, a big thing is not hitting the sidewall on drive serves. This is much more important than the ball not coming off the back wall, in my opinion. When the ball kicks off the sidewall, you're out of position and your opponent has a much more free shot, whereas if it comes off the back wall, your opponent is still striking a ball that's moving quickly, not necessarily with a wide open shot. So keep track of what's important. Obviously, the most important thing is to get your serve in. But after that, you know, it's much more important that you don't hit the sidewall than that the ball doesn't come off the back wall, for example. So make sure you're picking what's important and then tracking on that metric. The next thing is pick a consistent place that you stand and a consistent place that you hit the front wall. And be very specific about this. So I'll often line up my feet with a certain panel. If I'm at a new court that I'm not used to, I'll pick a panel that's, you know, right around where I'm used to feeling. And then I'll put my right foot on that panel in the same way every time, for example, so that I'm consistent. And then I'll know exactly where on the front wall I'm trying to hit my drive serve to the left, drive serve to the right, and Z serve, so that I'm much more consistent if I have a specific place I'm focusing on. Next is developing the ability to hit many different serves from many different spots. So this kind of goes along the lines of mixing up your serves. But just giving your opponent those different looks, you can even mix up the speed a bit. Although with drive serves, I think generally you just want to hit it with full power or 95% of power. But being able to hit different serves from different spots, that's very important. Also, observe your opponent's weaknesses and expose them. So look at what your opponent doesn't return well. Is your opponent's forehand significantly better than his or her backhand? Then serve to the backhand consistently. Is your opponent not cutting off lob serves or not cutting off Z serves? Then I think that can generally be an effective strategy. But observe your opponent's weaknesses and then expose them. Next is get out of the box immediately. So this also applies to both lob serves and drive serves. If you are serving and then just staying right in the service box, your opponent's going to be able to have a much easier return of serve than if you're back in a center court or if you're even taking away a little bit of the opponent's space. So if you serve to the left, crowd that left side a bit so that they have only as much room as necessary. So a couple tips specifically on the drive serve. First of all, don't pop up. This is a thing I see many people doing. You start low, and then in the end of your stance, you come up high. That's not what you want to do. You want to start low and stay low, or even start in a high position and end low. But if you're starting low and popping up, that's just, it's a strategy that will, you're setting yourself up for failure. Also, try to have the power that you would on a drop and hit shot. So when you're warming up, when you're just dropping the ball, shuffling into it and hitting it, I think people realize that they're going for maximum power, but then when they get in the service box, because there's this boundary, there's this restriction to how much they can move, people tend to not have the power that they could. Their windup is a little faster than it needs to be. And slow down and think about if you're hitting the ball much harder and much more comfortably on a drop and hit versus the serve. Because there's no reason that that needs to be the case. Think about your serve. You know, it's the one time you have full control of how you hit the ball. And you should be able to get essentially maximum power on that shot. Next is keep your weight balanced or even a little bit back. And this is it's kind of a twofold benefit, where if you're all over your front foot, there are two problems. One is that you're not getting the maximum amount of power that you could out of your serve, and that's because your front foot is essentially acting as a brake. Whereas if your weight is balanced, you're able to rotate around that front foot. If your weight is all over your front foot can do nothing but work to slow down your mass and your momentum to stop you from falling forward, and it's not acting as a rod that you can pivot around. The second thing is that if your weight is all over your front foot, you can't move back as quickly. You need to be getting back into center court as quickly as possible, and with your weight all over your front foot, that's an impossibility. The next are some tips on the lob serve. So the first thing I have on the lob serve is try to do the movement of the lob serve with your legs and core. So you're not swinging with your wrist and arm as much as you are just moving the legs to just lift the ball and using the core with a straight arm has a very consistent movement. Whereas if you're using your wrist, that's going to kind of be, you're setting yourself up for much more inconsistency. Next is, when you practice the lob serve, a great way to do this is to practice with a bucket along the back wall, and that will allow you to keep track of how many balls you're able to land in that area. You should, again, kind of keeping track of metrics and what's most important with the serve. A lob serve that comes off the back wall or that kicks way out off the side wall is so much worse than a lob serve that ends up hitting either wall very low or not hitting the back wall or the side wall at all. So if your serve is going to hit a wall, you want it to hit it fairly low so that your opponent isn't able to play the ball once it's slowed down off one of the walls. So there you have it. Those are some of my thoughts on the serve. There is much more to be said about those things, but those are some preliminary thoughts. Those are some first principles that I think could be the most important things that hopefully you can take some sort of takeaway and improve your serving game, which again is one of the most, if not the very most, important aspects of racquetball. The Racquetball Show is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, vegetarians, and racquetball players get lower rates on their life insurance. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people. Health IQ can save customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, to learn more, or to get a free quote on life insurance, you can visit healthiq.com/TRS. Link in the podcast description. This is a great way of supporting the podcast and of potentially getting great savings on your life insurance. Check them out. I am here with a friend of mine, Dan Whitley, out of St. Louis. He is the president of USA Racquetball. He's the president of the Missouri High School Racquetball and the general manager of Veda Sports. Dan, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dylan. That was a mouthful. You got it all out.
Yeah, luckily you prepped me right beforehand. Yeah. So, Dan, I'd like to start out with, very generally, what is USA Racquetball?
It's the national governing body for our sport, and we're the organization that helps us sanction all the tournaments and organize activities in racquetball. We promote it from the rec player all the way to our national team players, so all levels of racquetball, and it's a life sport, so we're out there to show that everybody has a place in it.
Yeah, and then what exactly do you guys do?
I get that question a lot. And you actually asked me it last night. I was like, well, I'm kind of ready to answer that.
Yeah.
And then it's a dialogue that can kind of go on for a while. So when you join and become a member of USA Racquetball, those dollars go into a number of different buckets and help in a number of different ways. You look across our national events and the support, those dollars go towards that, whether it's now the streaming that we've added, the R2 Sports and Development, the membership database that we have. And then you take it to the next level and you look at an event like the U.S. Open, the way we can help out there, our staff that's in the office year-round helps support all those events. Then a portion of those membership dollars also goes back to state associations. But in addition to that, our staff helps support state directors, tournament directors, the instructor program, the referee certification program. And now we're also looking to help establish some more grassroots directives. So we're looking at junior program development and collegiate program development so we can grow those players for tomorrow and beyond. So the dollars are spread across so many different activities.
Sure.
But we also make sure they go back regionally to those areas to help with the specific things in each area.
Yeah, and kind of what generally is the breakdown? Not maybe not specific numbers or anything, but where does most of the money go versus where is only a little bit of it going?
That's a very good question. And to just shoot straight and be candid, it's a little bit different every year. So
yeah.
A lot of that goes to folks who are doing some of those functions to have as a budget for those functions, and those functions kind of vary year to year. So our board's approving those different things. So for let's look at the present. Let's look at 2018.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the tournaments and the support that they need, whether it's contract folks to come in and help with those, or whether it's the staff support that's going there and how we assemble our personnel. And then beyond that, what initiatives are you working to grow towards? Like right now, we're looking at establishing, putting aside some funds that can help with collegiates and what we can do to grow juniors. And those are new initiatives that weren't there 2 years ago. I'd like to say that from my perspective, one of the reasons I wanted to get on the board was to help grow the grassroots initiatives and push for those. And so I'm happy to say we're pushing more that way than we were in the past. So
cool.
I'm happy to see that, and I want to continue to see that. I think everybody will like the benefits of having more people playing now so that there'll be more people playing later because we're focusing on that group.
Totally. And what are the initiatives you guys are focusing on right now?
So we have, as a board of directors, we've established 5 rocks, we called them.
Okay.
Something that we
the
set
rocks.
Up. Yeah.
Nice.
Something we set up last year in Arizona at our national singles meeting. So the first one was to get the committees all back on track. And what I mean by that is we had some committees that weren't being as active in recent years, and we wanted to sort of refresh them with whether it's new personnel on the committee or new purpose on the committee. One example would be the fundraising committee with new initiatives for the U.S. team, which that's another big part of what the dollars of membership go to, is to support the U.S. team initiatives, whether it's the junior teams or the adult team. We want to, on the committees, get those back going again. So the fundraising committee, for example, is one that we've kind of, based on need to get that one going. So that one, and across the board, we refreshed all the chairs, made sure everybody was still intact, and that was one of our rocks. The second rock was to refresh all of our marketing and make sure that we're, whether it's an email blast or a reminder on an event, that everything has a new look and was freshened up. Our third initiative was the U.S. team, fundraising specifically for it, and then promoting those athletes so that they have, and you and I have kind of talked offline about
yeah.
this, we want to promote the personalities of the athletes so that they're mm-hmm. more relatable. People want to see them at national events, and I think we still have a bit of a ways to go on there, but we're at least making and establishing traction on that. And then the fourth and fifth, you've already heard me talk about, the junior initiative, where we're trying to establish and identify key areas across the country. So if you're hearing this and you're in a key area where you'd like to get some support for juniors, please reach out to me or the national office staff, and we will help include you in what we're working on as it relates to juniors and then collegiates too. And Nick Irvine's doing a great job trying to get programs out there started and established, and we're looking at some different possibilities, ways we can support those kids getting started, and whether they're people who've been playing racquetball and they want to continue, whether they're people who will restart playing racquetball now that they're in college or start from scratch. They're in college, they need money, they need help and another investment, and something's tricky, but racquetball, you know this from just being around people who played college racquetball.
Sure.
It's a great social thing, and it's a way to make new friends around the country. So
totally.
Those are our 5
yeah.
rocks.
To sum up the 5 rocks for
yeah.
me again.
Yeah. So
just
I get
one
teased
word.
About
yeah.
this a little bit too by the board members. So number 1 was committees. Number 2 was the marketing. Number 3 was the U.S. team fundraising and promoting the players. Number 4 would be the juniors. And number 5 would be the collegiates.
Got it. Very cool. And yeah,
synced on that.
And not to speak for you, but when you say, you know, for people around the country, reach out to Dan or whomever to you know, help with whatever you're doing. Seriously, these guys are great resources. Maybe they don't have a ton of time, but they're happy to like lead you in whatever direction you need to go to help your program.
Thanks. the national office staff and Jason and Renee and Nick, they'll always help out if you reach out and say you need help. And then our board of directors is an awesome group of volunteers, and everybody who's there is there because they're passion driven, and so they really want to help. And if they can't help in the first second, they're going to follow back up with you, and they're going to be able to get in touch with you to help, and we want to hear, so don't hesitate to reach out.
Yeah, exactly. And Dan, you're the president of Missouri High School Racquetball, and for those who may not know, Missouri High School Racquetball now has how many participants?
We're right at like 500. I think we cleared. I think we were 501. I'm not even making that up. I think this year we had 501 yeah, nice. Kids in the program, so that's a pretty impressive number. We always kind of teeter around that 450, 475, so it was really neat to hit 501. Yeah. And it's just neat to see so many of these kids. And here we are, I'm talking to you in Portland, Oregon right now during high school nationals, and we had 142 of those kids make this trip. And I mean, that's just
so awesome.
I'm really proud of that group and all the parents and fundraising that took place to help get those kids here. It was really neat.
Yeah. So could you kind of take me through it? Because I don't know exactly. What is the trajectory of, you know, when did Missouri high school racquetball start becoming a thing? Because really, it's high school racquetball is only really a big thing in the Portland area, in Oregon, and in Missouri. When did it start becoming a thing? And then kind of what was that growth trajectory? What did it look like?
We're in our, if you can believe this, our 39th year in Missouri of this high school program. So it was established, the first champions were crowned in 79. And basically, there's a chain of racquetball clubs throughout St. Louis, Missouri, that were the Spalding clubs. And those clubs the courts were full from 5 a.m. to midnight almost every day, with the exception of 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. They could not figure out what to do with the courts to get people on them between those times. So they reached out to area high schools to see if they could do an intramural or something like that. So each of the clubs in the area, and there was like, I'm probably going to get the number wrong, I want to say like 8 or 9 of these Spalding clubs, they reached out to the high schools that were within a couple mile radius of them and offered the opportunity to have intramurals. So each club basically became its own conference, because then the winners of intramurals at school A played the winner of school B, and informally this whole thing started, and that was preceding the start of our league. Then it formalized into a league in like 78, 79, and it just took off from there. Essentially, moms were coming home and not playing during the day because they wanted to pick their kids up off the school bus. Dads weren't done with work, so they couldn't use the club's courts until 5, and this just took off like wildfire, and it was just one more activity, and racquetball was booming. These clubs were popping up, and kids wanted to do what their parents were doing. They're staying in the nurseries. Now's the time that they've seen this for years. They'd like to go play, and it just took off from there, and it's gone through many versions since then. It started off like teams of 5 or 6 kids from each school and a couple hundred kids. And now we don't cut kids. It's all inclusive. We have different, I'll spare you the explanation, but we have different tiers for sort of skill levels within that. But no kid is really turned away. And because it's a life sport, it's something that they can play forever. So just getting that taste and experience with it now. For some kids, it's great cross training. For some kids, it becomes their true passion. For some kids, it becomes the only athletic experience they've ever had. And then the thing I most like about it, because it's what resonates most with me, is it's a sport sons can play with their mothers and daughters can play with their dads. And you don't see, you know, mother and son throwing a football around the front yard or a dad doing that with his daughter. And it's just, this is some neat thing that you can go down the street to your club and play with your family. So
yeah, pretty awesome. I've always wondered so you kind of explained it there, but how something starts from scratch, starts from zero and becomes something pretty great. How do you think, if you're somebody looking to start a program, I don't know, somewhere that doesn't have one, how do you go about that?
I'm actually trying that myself. We now have a second facility back home in St. Louis, and there's almost a 30-mile difference between the two complexes. So this summer we're starting to reach out to the schools out in that area, and we're looking at it like an intramural. Here's an extra activity we can provide for you. Kids, once you reach high school, you can't always continue on at every sport you've been doing. So some are looking for that new thing to latch on. Some are looking for that thing to pass time that's fun. And you can say from experience, you bring a friend out to play racquetball, they kind of like it at first, but they're not sure what to do with that like. So we provide that program that allows them to continue on with it. And we've got the support from the other kids who've already done this to continue on. So we're cheating a little bit on starting from scratch.
Yeah.
So that's where if you have an intramural where it's like, hey, everybody this is new to, that creates that level playing field to start off from. It's new to everybody. And we're going to do some open house nights where we're welcoming kids from a school, and we're going to invite tennis teams out to come try this as an alternative to that.
Yeah.
And we're reaching out to PE classes, and we're going to try a bunch of different things with the schools. And if the school won't let you, you just need to – I'm using my son as an example now. He's a third grader, and he's reaching out to friends of his.
Yeah.
And they want to start a third grade team in a couple of weeks, which has no league or no anything, but it's going to be the start of a junior program just because you just have that – all you need is that one advocate – and then that'll help when they get a little older, too, to get more kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I find that whenever I talk to somebody who, you know, isn't involved in the sport and I tell them I play racquetball, they'll be like, you know, I've played once or twice, and it was fun, or my dad played, or whatever. They'll know of someone who played. So for such a kind of small sport, it's crazy to have that many people who played. So my theory is, you know, people will play once or twice, but there's no infrastructure to, like, catch them and help them continue on playing, help get them to be part of a group and part of a league or whatever.
And that's what we're trying to do. It's, you can't just say, hey, come out and play, you should try this.
Yeah.
It's like sampling the food at the grocery store, but they don't actually sell it. That's
yeah.
illogical, right? So we're trying to come up with that program that would, you know, bring those kids and keep them there. And we think we have the structure for it, and now we're going to reach out and give them the taste and then introduce the structure, as opposed to the absence of structure in the taste, or here's the structure, you don't get to try it, you just have to sign up whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
You don't know yet.
Interesting.
You sort of have to have both, and I think that's where we've had challenges before, and with other groups I've talked to, that's it. And if anybody's listening and wants to see some of the resources that we use for our league, you're free to have them all. If you go to our website, www.mohsrball.com, has all the materials for our high school program. It might be too intimidating to look at it first if you aren't familiar with our program on any level, and I'm happy to go through anything on there that anybody has any questions on and help them out with it. But we want to see it grow, and it can be different. Just like here in Oregon, the programs run a little differently than we run it in St. Louis. It doesn't have to be the same everywhere. Just anything that brings these kids out to the courts is awesome, and they do a great job here, and like to think we're doing a great job back home because everybody's just having fun with it.
Yeah.
It brings adults back into the sport too. That's the thing I
nice.
Forgot to say, because everybody's like, yeah, I dusted off the old racket, and I get to see some pretty interesting racket surface the first time a kid comes out to try it, because it's, you know, something, you know, you see some racket from the 90s and you're like, wow, I can't believe that's still out there. And then somebody trumps it because they bring something that's just the, like a leech racket that you haven't seen since 80 something. And it's like, wow, that one's older than that one. And kids just off to an interesting start, but you know their parent played, and you can pull them in to help with things. So it's
yeah.
kind of neat, just like baseball.
Yeah, so. That's funny. My roommate, who has basically no experience with racquetball, he knew I played, and he was saying his dad played, and his dad said he had this awesome racket back when he played. And he's like, I was excited to bring it out and use it, because like, I was thinking when I played with my buddies and they're just using the free rec center rackets, I'll have a way better one. And it's like he's using this, I don't know, tight aluminum frame, like metal racket, and whatever was $20 at Dick's was way better. I don't know.
It's awesome, though. Yeah. I mean, the thing I think is also neat, too, is I always hear that there's not people who will help. And I don't buy that, because I look at, like, my son played baseball last year, for example. There were dads from all the kids who lent a hand when help was needed with the team.
Yeah.
And I think once you get a couple of kids who like doing it, parents will help. They don't have to be the pro player.
Totally.
You can have somebody help do some of the administration or the fee collection. And that's all. That's the other thing. It doesn't have to be free. Clubs can have junior programs. These kids are going to spend money on a sport.
Yeah.
It can be racquetball. It doesn't have to be free.
You yeah.
can charge something for it. And that's the neat thing, too. They're used to playing other club sports in high school, at least in Missouri. Like, I'll use hockey as an example. There's a cost with it. And
totally.
Kids are used to spending money on sports. So it's not something that, you know, clubs can say, well, I wanted to bring kids in, so I had to have a free program. It doesn't have to be free, and parents will help. And so all the resources are kind of there. It's just how you can get that plan together initially versus just having an open play.
Yeah, I'm interested. I was having an argument recently with a friend who was making the case that people in racquetball aren't used to paying for things. And that's an issue in the sense that there are a ton of sponsorships given out. Not a lot of people buy the brand new top end racket at full ticket price. So people, you know, people don't really buy tickets to watch the pros.
they're just used to the expectation of things will be free. Do you think that's the case, and do you think that's a problem? Do you think we need to address that in some way?
It's a blessing and a curse. The inclusive feeling all these folks or ambassadors feel is that they're part of the game and have an influence on the game, which is phenomenal. That's awesome. But if you look at golf and the enthusiasts for golf or for tennis, I'll even take bowling. They pay every time they participate. And in racquetball, you don't. You often belong to a club where it's unlimited play for a certain price. You play in a tournament. You expect things. I mean, I've hosted tennis tournaments and pickleball tournaments, and the value proposition attached with the entry fees that are somewhat steeper in a lot of cases include, they don't include the shirt, they don't include the food, and people pay them because that's the industry rate. Here, you have to put a huge value proposition. Mm-hmm. And myself and other tournament directors, we do the best we can to, you know, respond and create that value proposition. But there's always going to be somebody who wants a little bit more, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
And there does seem to be, with racquetball, people who will refer to the good old days and how it used to be.
Uh-huh.
And I was having a conversation with somebody about that last night. And part of that is just people remember and had a great time in the good old days.
Sure.
Whatever those days are to them. Because what are the good old days? 20 years ago, 10 years ago? It's all relative to who you're talking to. You talk to the kids here. The good old days were 2 years ago when they were last year at this tournament.
Yeah.
And, oh, it was so much more awesome then. Well, no. You're just telling that to boast because you were here last time.
Yeah.
And so it's all relative. I think that racquetball is different now than it was 2 years ago, 10 years ago. And there's some things that we don't have as many people participating in certain things. And there's different reasons why. But we also have more people participating in certain things. Look at this event and look at the high school kids. And we want to keep having these great experiences for these young people so that they'll continue to play. Because one of the biggest things that isn't attached to the value proposition are the friendships and relationships that are created at these events and bringing everybody together. And I think, for me, that's what I always enjoy about high school nationals is seeing people. And I love seeing that people who used to be players are now back as coaches, and they're still ingrained in the system. And it's on this trip in particular from St. Louis, I'm stunned by how many, I'll say 20-something-year-old coaches who are alumni of our program made this trip on their own dime to come out here to coach the kids. I'm just like, I'm speechless. So you can tell that meant something to them. They're not entered in the tournament. They didn't pay an entry fee. They're not getting a shirt.
Yeah.
And they're here. And so I think it's the bringing together people that's the big deal, and having a good time. And I don't want to be corny and say you can't put a price on that, but that's, you know, if you're just coming for the shirt, you could go to the store down the street and just buy a shirt.
Yeah.
Save you some airfare.
I don't think a lot of people come for just the
shirt. Yeah, I know, but that's, I'm talking about
No, I got you.
The value proposition is so much larger. And so
I
think that's the return we're trying to give people.
That's great. What is your vision for USA Racquetball? If you could think of it maybe years down the road, what would you want it to accomplish and look like maybe, I don't know, 5-10 years down the road?
That's a really good question, and it's one that's on my mind because it's not Dan Whitley's vision. It's
right.
It's a group of people, but the component I want to help push, and I'm going back to it, I feel like I'm regurgitating these rocks, but it's the juniors and it's the collegiates. And maybe that's because that's what I'm most passionate about. Maybe that's why I hopped on, you know, applying to be voted onto the board. I just love working with these kids. And I was a racquetball player. My parents both played. I got so much from the sport. I ended up meeting my wife through the sport. I wanted to help enable and give opportunity to people to have those same experiences. So when I look at the vision for the sport, all these young people are having a great time with the sport. Can we double that? Can we get that? It seems like there's a program in a box here in Oregon that could be replicated someplace else. Seems like we can box up what we do in St. Louis and offer it someplace else. Seems like there's got to be somebody in one of the other 50 states who has an idea that's completely different from ours but just hasn't had the opportunity to share it. So I want to harvest those ideas, put them together so that it makes it easier for somebody to get started. So they don't have to have that plan. They can have that open house, and then I've given them the plan to take it to the next level, or our association has given it the plan, or Oregon shared the plan. I just see that, and then I see the collegiates. There's still courts across all these campuses in the country. People can be exposed to it. For me, I was at the University of Missouri. It was a great opportunity for me to meet adults or faculty at the university on court. It's a great opportunity. My high school didn't have a high school racquetball team when I was in high school. I played adult tournaments through high school, but I got to meet other people my age and play. And those are friendships I still have to this day, even though not as many of them still play racquetball. But racquetball is just a great networking opportunity, and for young people it can be a critical part. I'm talking to kids that I brought here, and they're looking for colleges with courts, and that's their criteria for determining their future. Yeah. I think that's just awesome. So if you're going to ask me my vision, it's always going to be kid-oriented and to grow those junior programs so that those are feeding into the adult ones, and that's where my head's at on vision.
Yeah, yeah. One thing you've mentioned a couple times is being able to take what's being done in a certain area and essentially copy and paste in another area. Not that you can't put your own twist on things, but my two cents is I think it would be a great thing to have resources of a written out website page of I'm Dave Ellis and here's what I did in Stockton, California to promote racquetball. You know, here's how we're running shootouts. If you're doing this for the first time, here are the steps you need to take. Something like that. And yeah, I think it would be a great resource. And maybe this is a USA Racquetball thing. Maybe it can be done elsewhere. But having that as a resource for people who are, you know, looking to install a certain program or copy another program's success, I think would be a great thing to have.
I love that. I think that's great. Yeah. And Dave and I were actually talking, I guess I'm losing track of the week here. I guess it was yesterday we were talking about the difference in his program versus the program I work with in Missouri. And I tend to have kids who are introduced to the sport their first year of high school, and then they've learned it for a couple of years. He's taking kids of all ages, and he's pushing them to, I'll say, higher aspirations in terms of playing status and maybe more commitment during the week in terms of playing time. And we're discussing how we can kind of share with each other,
yeah,
you know, the differences in our programs to help add extra layers to each other's the structure. And
yeah,
why couldn't we do just exactly what you describe? And if we can help each other, we can definitely help everyone. And if I'm interested in what he's saying and he's interested in what I'm saying, we can definitely put this together. I love the bulleted thing, whether it's just like a PDF list so they can download it for starters. It's just, here's a sheet on how they do it. Here's a sheet on how they do it. Just, if nothing else, like almost an executive summary of how each region does something.
Right.
And then contacts. Go here for more information or contact this person for more information.
Yeah.
It's genius, Dylan. I like it.
Yeah, I feel like I've stolen that idea from other people, yeah, or I don't know. It's
that's okay. If, yeah, if no, you have, yeah, that means exactly. There's that's a demand, the, so that's yeah, great.
Yeah, that's the point. I think, yeah, sharing ideas and crowdsourcing how we do things is a great way to help grow. That being said, as someone who has helped Missouri high school racquetball grow, get to a certain level of success, and run a bunch of tournaments yourself, what advice would you give to someone who's trying to help grow a program in their local area or in their state or whatever it is?
Set a goal and then set steps along the way, because I think everybody, it's kind of like some of the, I'm going to use a lot of kid analogies because I've just been coaching all week, but
yeah,
if the win is the only thing that's important to you, it's going to be tricky because there's only one winner in the end. But if you can, you know, achieve traction along the way and measures of success. So if you're trying to get a program started, you know, step one would be getting a group of people together who are interested in helping get the program started. And two is identifying a space or a school or a community in which you want to bring juniors out and a facility that you're going to do it at. And then just every time you check off one of those boxes, you have traction and you're on the way. It's not the boxes you haven't checked, it's the ones you have. I think everybody looks at that. It's the half empty, half full glass analogy.
Sure.
But I think if you just want the program and it's done, I think it's awesome if you start and have a program with, I'll say, 8 to 10 kids, and then you can grow from there. Start with one school, one team versus several teams across several schools in an area. Just getting kids together who has, then they're the advocates for it. The other thing I would encourage would be to start with lower grade. So if you have a program, for example, you're going to identify a high school you want to start a racquetball program at. Make sure to include the freshmen and sophomores, but give them attention that's different than the juniors and seniors. The juniors and seniors will love it, and you want to include them. But if you focus on just them and they love it, they're gone. Now the ambassadors of tomorrow were intimidated and didn't maybe enjoy it if you were giving more attention to the vocal older kids. And so it's just as important to show individual interest to each grade level, just as schools do for, you know, academics, so that everybody's included. So getting those boxes checked off early on some of the key parts that you need, but then also making sure once you get going that you show interest individually in each grade level and the participants. That's what keeps them feeling included, and that's what keeps them coming back. And it's neat. And then they testify and give examples next year at that school to recruit kids. Oh, you guys should do this. It's fun and it's awesome. And they're the ones bouncing racquetballs around the school hallways. At least that's what I envision to recruit kids with. And
sure.
I don't know. I think it's contagious. So, but you have to get some of those boxes checked early on, and then you have to get the kids involved and make sure that they're interested.
Yeah, but it's all certainly doable. And, you know, there are plenty of people who can help you out with this if you're somebody who's trying to implement this in your local area.
It's one of those things. I think once you get started, you're going to want to see it through, but don't just enjoy those moments along the way. And then I'm going to say this again. You can reach out to anyone here in Oregon or anyone in Missouri who's doing this. And I, you know, if you reach out to me in Missouri, there's so many different schools who've gone so many different pathways to get their programs started or maintained or retained. And there's going to be somebody who's similar to you and can relate to you. And that's going to be what helps. And everybody looks for mentors or coaches on different things in life. There's help out there for this. You're not alone. And if you have that interest, there's people who can help.
Yeah. If you were to, is there a specific program that you think has done a really good job and has some sort of new idea that could be used in other places?
Wow. I don't have one specifically. I can clearly say that one of the challenges in St. Louis is our program is growing, but we aren't adding more courts in the community. And what I have seen in recent years is a real resourcefulness of coaches in the number of players per court and the way they can structure instruction and keep the kids engaged.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I don't think should be a limitation. When I've heard examples in the past of, I have 10 kids, but I only have 2 courts. How do I, blah, blah. There are so many things you can still do. And mm-hmm. we have resources for that. So when you say a particular school, I don't have one unique example, but I have several. I'll spare you all of them.
Sure.
But you can do different things where the kids are going on the court and they're playing out rallies, or they're going to have spaces where they can hop off the court, do ladder drills in between, or they're jumping rope, or they're doing something. So they're keeping their heart rate up and they're doing different things.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's fascinating to me to watch how everybody's taking a different approach to space allocation. And I think that's one of the little nuances that wouldn't come up if you didn't ask that question in terms of discussion. But I can see somebody saying, well, I'd love to start a high school program, but we only have a couple courts at the Y down the street. I don't have the space. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have the space. It's just how you use it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a favorite racquetball story from all your years in the sport that you could share?
You asked me this before we started talking, and I knew the one I wanted to use, and I'll be more than happy to share that one. I've been coaching since 2002 in this high school program, and in 2002 I coach a team of young ladies from Corey Azuk Academy in St. Louis, and been doing that since 2002. And in 2007 the team was, they played really, really well, and they won a national championship, and it was phenomenal. And our top performer on that team and our team MVP that season, she went undefeated through the tournament at her seed in singles and doubles. And she just kept fighting and just kept playing. Her name was Jenny Strazacker. And she graduated in 07, and her younger sister, Lauren Strazacker, hopped on our team in fall of 07 and joined us. And she played with us through 2011. So she had her last high school nationals in 2011. In fall of 2010, Jenny Strazacker, the older sister, passed away to cancer. And it really hit our team hard, our racquetball community hard, and, you know, myself and a lot of friends very hard. She was just such a great young lady. And our team that year was a great group of kids, and Lauren, the younger sister, was a senior and just tried her best and did her best all the time, but that was a heavy weight to carry your senior year of school. We weren't the favorite team to win our state title that year, but the team miraculously won a state title that year. And then we played in nationals, and the team used the phrase destiny because they thought they needed to do the best they could. And when they won nationals, They just thought, you keep fighting. I mean, this was, and they were dedicating the whole season. They had JS on their sleeves for Jenny. But Lauren was our number 2 seed, and she was in one of the consolation brackets in a medal match and toughed it out against a tough person that she was playing who seemed to be outperforming her in warm-ups, and she was intimidated. And then now, next thing you know, they're in a tiebreaker, and somehow Lauren's got that 10th point, and the ball goes into the back left corner, and she went to swing but couldn't swing. Her racket's jammed in there, but somehow her racket face is facing the front right corner, and yet the ball shot towards the front right corner but bent over, hits the left side wall, and splats out off the front wall, and she wins the match. And I'm like, I don't even see how she didn't swing. I'm looking at people upstairs. I don't see how the ball bent that way. I don't see how it did. And then I went down the hall, and I was talking to her. It was just like I was talking to her sister a few years before in a tiebreaker. And she said, I tried to swing. I just said, Jenny, please help me. And the ball shot off my racket and bent like that, and it gave everybody chills. Now the whole team's in tears, and everybody's But that season, that shot, it still sticks with me as chills because there was no swing. The ball bent in the weirdest way. And just if that story, if I can tell it and it helps keep Jenny's memory out there of being, you know, the resilient fighter, and Lauren and that team that year was a really special team in 2011. They just overcame so much in that day, and that championship will always be a really special one for a lot of us. So.
Yeah, that's super awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Thanks for asking.
I actually remember another story of yours. You said, because you were a player back in the day, you know, as people not realize, but you were a very solid player. You at one point were facing Rocky Carson and had an interesting match.
Yeah. Okay. So I can share this. So that was 02, 03, 04, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I'm in Houston, and I'm in the round of 32 against Rocky on the main court at that downtown YMCA in Houston. The sidewall glass, backwall glass, and I am stinking. I'm playing horrible.
Yeah.
And I think Rocky's up 7-0 on me, and I'm just frustrated, everything. And he comes up, puts his arm around me, pats me on the back, and says that a mutual friend of ours, Josh Tucker, told him I was a good player and all this stuff, and he had seen me play a little earlier, and that, come on, get into this game, let's put on a show, and told me I needed to get going. And I'm like, there's all these people watching, and I'm getting coached up by my opponent in this U.S. team qualifying event. What the heck's going on here? And I lost 15-7 that game, and then the next game, neck and neck for a little bit, and then he pulled away. But I think I lost, and maybe I've embellished this in my head slightly, but I believe I lost 7-7. But I always look back on that as that is one of the coolest things. And I probably should have mentioned this to Rocky in recent years when I've been near him and stuff.
Sure.
Because it always sticks out to me. That what a neat thing to do. And
totally
calmed me down. And that side wall in Houston's intimidating. If you've ever seen or heard about that, that's a tricky wall to have him serving against you along. But that's when you were saying bring up some stories, that's definitely one that was in my head as one that I was thinking of bringing up. So I'm glad you mentioned it too.
Yeah.
That's always... I always remember Houston as being such an awesome town, and that's always going to be one of the stories I remember from there and playing on that court against him. That's a good memory despite a tough defeat.
Sure, yeah, I thought that one was particularly interesting. Yeah not often you get advice from your opponent on, you know.
It's always going to be a good memory, and I've always pulled for Rocky as a result of that match. I always thought that was awesome. So.
Yeah. So, let's see. Before we head out, I guess, is there anything else you'd like to discuss as far as ways you see the sport could be grown?
It's such a great question. Obviously, I've talked about the kids thing ad nauseum, but there's so many people out there who have played racquetball before. If you know somebody who's played, the best way to get them to come back is to invite them. So, if you have a friend who's played before and, you know, if you're a more advanced player, still bring that person out. I see it in tennis and pickleball at the facilities I have, and I also see it at racquetball, so I don't want to speak differently of that. But welcome them back. Get a guest pass to that club. The club will comp the guest pass. It'd be ridiculous not to bring them in to try it again, because that's the best way. The people who've already tried it. And the people who haven't tried it, I think that's another area that's missing in our game, the adult intro program, where you can bring somebody in and teach them the sport. The game's not as intuitive if you're just – join a club, walk on the court with your racket and ball and try to figure it out for yourself. You need some sort of onboarding. If you join a fitness center, they're going to show you how to use the equipment. Why shouldn't they have the means by which to teach you racquetball or show you that? And it would be neat to see more clubs get behind that, or advocating by having a member who's like an ambassador or something for the club, for the sport in that facility, who can teach you and onboard you through the process. One of the examples recently, USA Racquetball has purchased WAR, and one of the things that I like to give as an example, I think I was talking to you about this yesterday. So there's all of these outdoor racquetball courts, and I'm sure you've seen all of the outdoor tennis courts around the country.
Yeah.
Kids go to parks and will play tennis in the summer. My kids are in a park that has tennis and racquetball courts, racquetball, handball courts, and it's right near the playground. So you could conceivably go hit a racquetball against these walls. My kids have sort of learned racquetball outside, despite the fact that I work in an indoor racquetball environment, which I find fascinating that they can enjoy the outdoor component of this. And I think through tennis and some of the things they've done to grow programs through parks, what I'm trying to do and would like to see is a means by which we can establish as part of park curriculums and park summer programming around the country. I mean, the world's fine.
Yeah, why not?
But is to have programs for racquetball. And I think it's simple. The structure is there. If it's present in a park, why not use it? I mean, you see, I think I was using the example, kids can kick a soccer ball around. They can play catch with a baseball. You can play catch with a football. But you can hit a racquetball into a wall. Now, you can hit a tennis ball over a net, but it doesn't come back to you. So this is actually better than that. So I'm gonna side with racquetball. But I think those types of things, taking advantage of clubs that are there and giving people the opportunity to bring people back to the sport, adults, and then taking advantage of the courts that are in parks for kids, I think those are the next steps that we need to really focus on to help. And that's my two cents and the examples.
I like it. Again, before you leave, is there anything you'd like to leave people with? Anything, you know, any message from the USA racquetball side of things that you'd like to leave people with?
I encourage, you know, we're about to, I guess we already are. It's already March. I got here in February and I realized it's March. So we're in another election cycle, and I encourage people to vote for new representation on the board of directors. There's some great candidates out there. I encourage people to get more involved if they have strong feelings about things. We have a number of committees that are looking for folks, and you can find those on our website. And I think there are a number of opportunities if you want to be more involved that you can get more involved. But if you just want to help grow the sport, bring people into the clubs and introduce the game to people who've never played it before. And I know I've focused on kids, but kids and adults alike, it's a great game. And so many people around me, around you, have just realized so much because of it. And I think there's an opportunity for us to bring more into this awesome family. So
yeah,
that's my two cents. That's my parting shot.
Awesome. Well, Dan, thanks so much for coming on. I'm glad we were finally able to sit down and get this conversation in. I think this will be really helpful for some people.
Yeah, and great job on this podcast. I've enjoyed listening to them, and I appreciate it. I'm honored that you're having me on here, and I just appreciate you making the time for me and being patient enough that we could schedule this too, because it's I know we've been trying this for a while.
Yeah, so it took some patience on your end too, I'm sure. So yeah, cool. I appreciate it, Dan. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it, Dylan.
All right. Take care. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Racquetball Show. If you want to reach out to me, feel free. I'd be happy to hear from you. Dylan@racquetballshow.com is the best way to reach me. DYLAN@racquetballshow.com. Thank you so much.